This is Afghans being killed for larger foreign objectives.
Afghan peace is elusive. We speak with former President Hamid Karzai for insight. It's Monday, October 26th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Rohingyas get U.S. help. Pakistan fights polio. A last direct spar between U.S. presidential hopefuls. Deliberately catching coronavirus. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As the teams representing the Taliban and Afghan government negotiate in Doha, Qatar on the future of their country, VOA's Aisha Tanzim spoke with former Afghan President Hamid Karzai about the impact the U.S. elections will have on those negotiations and whether the talks have a chance of success, along with other topics facing Afghanistan.
Mr. President, thank you so much for talking to VOA.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
We are very close to the U.S. elections. How do you think the outcome of those elections impacts the Afghan peace process?
Well, I don't think the outcome of the elections will have an impact of a nature that will deviate the process. No. It may be, there may be a difference in approaches or in speed of things, but not on the overall objective of the United States for hopefully a settlement in Afghanistan and the reduction of their troops.
President Trump recently tweeted that all U.S. troops should come home by Christmas. Did it have any impact on the process, on Doha, on thinking in Kabul? Did it change anything?
It did not. We know President Trump's views on the conflict in Afghanistan and the U.S. involvement. He has been speaking fairly clearly, rather very, very clearly, on the withdrawal of troops, on the significant reduction of troops, if not the complete withdrawal of troops, and on bringing a settlement and on allowing the Afghans to determine their own future, which we respect. That's exactly what we should be doing.
Let's talk about the Afghan peace process, starting with the deal that the Taliban and the United States signed in February. Do you think that was a good deal?
The deal, as far as it envisages an end to conflict in Afghanistan, an end to fighting in Afghanistan, an end to fratricide and Afghan killing, is wonderful. We want, not now, we want yesterday this to end. Whether the intention in the United States is for durable peace and settlement in Afghanistan is something that we should see in the process. We want to be friends with all our neighbors. We also want to be friends with the United States. We want a civilized relationship, a friendly relationship. We don't want a relationship based on the export of extremism or radicalism to us. Now, having said this, the peace process that the U.S. is bringing, we now see that it is in great coordination with Pakistan. We understand Pakistan's role. But peace for us is one thing, and deals between the United States of America and Pakistan on us is a different issue. That we don't want, that we will resist. It was these deals exactly when the Soviet Union withdrew between the United States and Pakistan that got us to the misery that we have today.
As you're talking of Pakistan, let's talk about other regional countries as well. What do you see their role right now? Is it right now constructive? Is it positive?
We very much hope that all our neighbors will participate and support the Afghan peace process, and that all our neighbors will take this opportunity to work with the United States and other neighbors of Afghanistan and major powers, Russia, China, India, to be part of it in a very significant way, so that no country is left wondering as to what's going on, and there should be no behind-the-deals schemes there. We want transparency. We don't want Afghanistan to be a place of conflict of interest between countries. We don't want Afghanistan to be a place of rivalry. That is where we have suffered. We want Afghanistan to be a place of cooperation. this is not an Afghan war or the war for Afghan interests. This is Afghans being killed for larger foreign objectives.
So how do you end it? Let's talk about that. What do you do? Right now there are negotiations going on in Doha. They seem to be at a deadlock. How do you break that deadlock?
Well, when we went to Moscow last year, it was the same Taliban, the same delegation almost, the same leadership, and we had no issues. We sat down and we talked. If the intention in the United States is for peace in Afghanistan, these talks will succeed. I have no doubt. And if the intention in Pakistan, and together for Pakistan and the United States, is for peace in Afghanistan, these talks will succeed.
You mentioned Moscow. You've interacted with Taliban quite a bit. Do you think the Taliban have changed and become more tolerant, as they claim, different from the 90s? Or do you think these are the same Taliban, they've just become more political savvy?
The Taliban are Afghans. They have suffered as much as the rest of Afghans have suffered. So the suffering, ma'am, belongs to all the Afghan people. We, the Afghan people, Taliban and others, others and Taliban. It is this recognition that's there in all of us. It's the miracle, should I say, that will bring us to peace and settlement. And I'm sure that day will come. It's already, I believe, near us.
Former Afghan President Hamid Karzai speaking with VOA's Aisha Tanzim. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. You'll find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. And as always, take a moment to stop by our voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Thai protest leader says our demands are supremely clear. Thai protests inspire rare online government criticism in neighboring Laos. India gives submarine to Myanmar amid growing Chinese footprint in Indian Ocean countries. Cambodia expects to be landmine-free within 5 years. Australian research to guide Olympic coaching gender equality push. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United States has announced nearly $200 million in additional humanitarian assistance to Rohingya refugees who fled what the United States and others call ethnic cleansing in Rakhine State in Myanmar 3 years ago. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more on the recent global donor conference.
The plight of the 860,000 ethnic Rohingya Muslims who fled Myanmar 3 years ago to a refugee camp at Cox Bazar in Bangladesh was the focus of a virtual international donors conference Thursday that raised nearly $600 million in total. The United States remains the top financial donor and made clear that it stands with the Rohingyas and with Bangladesh and other countries in the region that are hosting refugees. Deputy Secretary of State Stephen Biegun.
The United States is providing an additional $200 million in humanitarian assistance for the Rohingya refugee response in 2020.
Donors said the Rohingya refugee crisis was created by Myanmar and its solution must be found by Myanmar. Bangladesh's State Minister for Foreign Affairs, Sharir Alam, said the current situation is untenable. Bangladeshi State Minister Sharir Alam.
Bangladesh is not in a position to continue to take the burden anymore. The Rohingyas must return to their country of origin as soon as possible.
The United Nations Refugee Agency has said conditions on the ground are not yet conducive for the Rohingya to return to Myanmar in a dignified, safe, and voluntary manner. For their part, Rohingya refugees highlighted their plight in a video featured during Thursday's conference. Rohingya refugee.
My hope for the future is to become a citizen of Myanmar Actually, this is my only hope, but for now, we are living in Malaysia.
One main obstacle is that Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, has not granted citizenship to the Rohingyas or even recognized the term Rohingyas for the ethnic Muslim minority. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Afghan security forces have killed Abu Musheen al-Masri, a senior al-Qaeda leader who is on the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation's most wanted terrorist list. Al-Masri has been charged in the United States with having provided material support and resources to a foreign terrorist organization and conspiracy to kill U.S. nationals. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. Thanks for sharing it with us at VOA Asia. Polio has been eradicated over much of the world, but Pakistan is still fighting the disease, in part because of skepticism about vaccines. One woman is fighting to change that, as VOA's Sidradar reports in the story narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Khalida Nasreen rides her all-terrain vehicle in Tori Bangash Colony in the outskirts of the most populated city in Pakistan, Karachi. At 60, she's the oldest polio worker in the city. This neighborhood is known for its violence and high crime rate, but Nasreen still comes here to urge religious conservatives to get the polio vaccine.
Yahan murder bhi do ho chuke the.
There had been two murders here, and after that, no one was ready to work here. So I started this work at that time. In 2014, this area was considered dangerous, and I also got several threats.
She's here because Pakistan reported 147 cases of polio in 2019, by far the highest case rate in the world. The battle against the disease here and in neighboring Afghanistan has always been complicated by lack of awareness. Nasreen provides vaccinations and educates people about polio.
People never say no to me, and that's why I do this. I'm not doing it for money. There's something inside me that tells me that I need to do it for humanity.
Nasreen also supervises and mentors other polio workers. She says having an all-terrain vehicle, which she calls her bike, in this neighborhood is like having a weapon.
The only purpose of having a bike is to take care of all the polio working girls and get there quickly when they need me. This bike is my weapon. I can walk, but it is obvious that I need a bike to reach out to every family in a large area.
Nasreen says patience is one of the greatest weapons against polio, especially in remote places.
People are rude. Women are rude too. But our job is to stay calm. Tomorrow we have to knock on their doors again, so we try to tolerate this.
For Sidradar in Karachi, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Stay tuned. We'll have more about vaccines and viruses later in today's program.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Analysts say a reported spike in U.S. military flights over the seas near China reflects Washington's drive to understand and deter Chinese expansion in contested waters. U.S. military surveillance planes flew off China's coast 60 times in September, according to Chinese state-backed research. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, all eyes in the world are on the upcoming U.S. presidential election. President Donald Trump and his Democratic Party challenger Joe Biden met in Nashville, Tennessee late last week for the final debate of the presidential campaign. We hear more from VOA's Mike O'Sullivan.
The second and final face-off, less than 2 weeks before the election. The first topic, COVID-19.
It's a worldwide pandemic. It's all over the world. You see the spikes in Europe and many other places right now.
Trump says a vaccine may soon be ready. Biden says that's too late for the more than 220,000 Americans who have died.
Anyone who's responsible for that many deaths should not remain as president of the United States of America.
Each man accused the other of corruption, Trump apparently referring to the business dealings in Ukraine and Russia by Biden's son, Hunter.
All of the emails, the horrible emails of the kind of money that you were raking in, you and your family. And Joe, you were vice president when some of this was happening.
I made it clear.
Biden denied the allegation.
I have not taken a penny from any foreign source ever in my life. We learned that this president paid 50 times the tax in China, has a secret bank account with China, does business in China.
Trump said the Chinese account was not secret, and he has done business around the world. He denied news reports that he has paid little or no U.S. taxes in recent years.
I prepaid my tax tens over the last number of years. Tens of millions of dollars I prepaid.
The debate comes as U.S. security officials warn of foreign attempts at interference in the election.
That Russia has been involved, China has been involved to some degree, and now we learn that Iran is involved.
Trump said he has stood up to foreign rivals.
Because there has been nobody tougher than Russia between the sanctions. Nobody tougher than me on Russia. Between the sanctions, between all of what I've done with NATO, you know, I've got the NATO countries to put up an extra $130 billion, going to $420 billion a year. That's to guard against Russia.
One analyst said both candidates did well, Biden shining at the end of the 90 minutes.
The question near the end where they asked him, what would your message be if you win to the people who didn't vote for you? And it was a unifying message that was against all the polarization and toxicity that we see in our politics.
He said Trump was relentless.
He knew what he wanted to do, which is stain Biden with this alleged scandal involving his son. And he, I think, landed some blows.
With no clear winner, he said the debate is unlikely to change the minds of many voters. Biden leads in the polls, and the race now centers on a handful of battleground states that could decide the election. More than 40 million Americans have already cast their ballots in early voting. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, would you be willing to be deliberately infected with a potentially deadly coronavirus? Healthy volunteers in Britain are coming forward to do just that. They will be given the coronavirus to try to speed up the development of a vaccine, under plans announced by the British government. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
All current coronavirus vaccine trials involve giving volunteers the potential vaccine or a placebo and then waiting until enough of them have been exposed to the virus through their daily lives. That can take months or years. The British government announced this week it plans to begin so-called human challenge trials, deliberately infecting young and healthy human volunteers with the virus to speed up the development of vaccines. Several people have already volunteered.
So many people struggling right now, and I want this pandemic to be over. Every day that goes on, more cases are going on, more people are dying. And if this vaccine trial could mean that this period of trauma for the whole world will be over sooner, I want to help. I want to be a part of that.
Personally, I can't let this opportunity to do something, to really do something, pass me by when I'm at such lower risk than other people.
The government plans to invest more than $43.4 million in the challenge trial. The World Health Organization says it could be significant.
There is a very long history of this for development of a number of vaccines that has been a part of what has gone on with, say, the development of the cholera vaccines and the typhoid vaccines.
The WHO has expressed some concerns.
Volunteers must have full consent and they must select the volunteers in order to minimize their risk, because you will be challenging people with a virus that we do not have a treatment for.
Infections, hospitalizations, and deaths from the coronavirus are rising sharply in many countries around the world. A vaccine remains the best hope of any return to some kind of normality.
At this point in time, we do not have a way of stopping transmission. And we do not even have the financial capacity to give multiple antibody treatments, steroids, etc., 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 like Donald Trump received, to everybody in the population that ends up needing treatment. The cost is quite large for these kind of treatments. We don't have a vaccine. And therefore, as a result, we need to contain the spread of this virus. Not just manage it, contain it.
The initial aim of the British research team will be to discover the smallest amount of virus it takes to cause the COVID-19 infection using controlled doses of the virus. If approved by regulators and an ethics committee, it's hoped the full challenge trial could begin in May 2021, still many months away. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
At a time when growing numbers of people are shunning vaccines, the polio vaccine proves they work. As we hear from VOA's Carol Pearson, despite setbacks and a coronavirus pandemic, the world is making headway in eliminating the crippling disease.
At one time, polio paralyzed hundreds of thousands of children every year.
And the tragic aftermath.
In Africa alone, it afflicted 75,000 children annually. That's no longer the case.
We have just achieved a major milestone in global polio eradication with the certification of the African region as wild poliovirus free.
It was the first child to receive an injection of salt polio vaccine.
A vaccine ended polio in the developed world more than 50 years ago. In 1988, the Global Polio Eradication Initiative decided to end polio in developing countries. It's taken a lot of work, countless volunteers, global leadership, local leadership, and the backing of many donors. But now, the wild polio virus exists only in Afghanistan and Pakistan. In both countries, there has been a resurgence of the virus in recent years. In Pakistan, people displaced by violence and conflict have resettled in communities with poor health services and sanitation.
Polio virus is very unforgiving in these communities. You know, they're densely settled, they're, you know, poor sanitation and hygiene. The conditions are very favorable for polio virus transmission to thrive, to be really entrenched there.
Jafari says the eradication program is now helping these communities meet more of their health needs, like access to clean water. In Afghanistan, the Taliban doesn't allow mass inoculations or house-to-house immunizations.
If you don't do house-to-house campaigns, can you perhaps carry out immunization campaigns in small immunization centers, many small immunization centers in a particular community, so that families don't have to travel very far to have their children immunized? So we're trying to be creative and looking at ways to move our polio eradication efforts forward in those two remaining endemic countries.
Because of the coronavirus pandemic, vaccinators in all countries wear masks and gloves. Global polio eradication is close, and the milestones are significant. But unless the disease is wiped out in Afghanistan and Pakistan, it could once again circulate globally. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
That's all the time we have for our program today. We thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. We continue online at Facebook at VOA Asia, also Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.